You're listening to the Tennis.com Podcast. And here's your host, Ed McGrogan.
Hey everyone, Tennis.com Podcast, second week of the season. I'm Ed McGrogan here with Steve Tigner, Pete Bodo, our two tennis gurus. Steve will be down in Melbourne actually in just a couple days. Have a lot for the Australian Open, of course. Pete will be here stateside, staying up late and doing, you know, everybody will be up late in some capacity, but that's how it's going to be. And for this week here, we're going to look back at the past weekend of tournaments, the first five events of the year, look a little ahead to this week that preludes the big slam first of the season. And the big takeaway from this weekend, I felt, was the three men's champions are Milos Raonic, Joe Wilfried Tsonga, Andy Murray. They may be actually the three men most likely, the three slamless men who maybe are the best players not to have won one, actually.
No, wait a second, Eddie. What about Soderling? What about Berdych? What about Ferrer? Raonic, he's a kid. He's 21 years old.
They're old. That's two. That's in the past. Who knows?
Right, they're over.
Yeah, it's but all of these three guys, we can start talking about whoever you want. Maybe who had the best weekend of these three, in your guys' opinion?
I think Murray had the best week because he got off on a right foot with his coach, Yvonne Lendl. I think, you know, Lendl is that's been a very, very, very big addition, I think, to Murray's thing. Here's a guy who went from having like really low key, who is this guy in quotes kind of coaches, to getting one of the most successful Grand Slam champions, and a guy who actually remade himself in a way not too dissimilar from the way Murray needs to remake himself.
Do you think Lendl really gives Murray a lot more credibility in that respect, because we're not talking about like his friend Miles McLagan or his mother Judy Murray in this corner?
Well, yeah, that's what happens, I think. You know, now suddenly it's kind of like a shot fired across the bow of all the other players saying, okay, I've got a different guy. I'm going to be a different player. I'm going to make some changes, and you could look for a new wave out of me, kind of. And that, you know, that puts fear into other guys, you know, minds, and they're wondering about him now, you know, regardless of everything else. But I do think also that Lendl will bring a lot to the table in his partnership.
I think the one main thing that Lendl will bring, well, you know, we'll find out what technical changes or whatever strategic changes he wants to make. But just for Murray to have a guy like Lendl to sort of play for, to see in his box, to look up to, I think that's a big deal for a guy like that. When Roddick hired Connors, I think half of the reason that he had a little positive bump there for a while is just the fact that, hey, this guy believes in me. I want to play well for this guy.
That's right. There's a certain amount of pressure even that comes with that. That's a good thing.
Here's Yvonne Lendl's, you know, he's watching me. He has expectations.
Someone to answer to.
So, yeah. And that's something new for Murray. He did, you know, we'll see how it goes. That didn't go so well when he had Brad Gilbert. They made some improvements, but it didn't end really well. We'll see what their relationship ends up being like. But I liked Murray's game this weekend. Dolgopolov in the final was hurt, but Murray seemed to be going for more on the forehand. That's the one place where he could make some improvements. Lendl obviously had a great forehand, so that's something to look for.
And you know, Lendl had a real cut to the chase mentality. You know, Lendl was the ultimate logical, you know, like, what are you doing that for? You know, kind of guy. You know, he really pared his game down, made the most of his assets. Very logical, very cold thinking kind of a, you know, guy. If you could have crunched numbers at that time the way they do today and come up with algorithms for how to play, Lendl would have tried it. So, and I think Murray can use that because Murray screws around a lot.
Lendl was playing the big game sort of.
I think Lendl was in his way a really positive player. He tried everything. There wasn't a lot of angst to his game the way somebody like John McEnroe had, and the way Murray has. Lendl just went about, if he had a problem, he tried to solve it. He used any way he could to get better.
Right.
And that's something he can instill in Murray.
Yeah, those were, you know, you're saying with Dolgopolov there, Murray played Tomic in the semis. Those are players that a crafty player like Murray could get into these really heavy rally games. But he did take down both those guys pretty convincingly, and that's a strong sign for him in that partnership there. I think Lendl actually may have been in attendance for the I don't think it was the beginning of the week, but he was there by the end. For Tsonga and for Raonic, the Tsonga match actually happened a few days ago by now. The way the tournaments are staggered, some of them ended on Saturday, some on Sunday. Kind of depending where you are, you may think they've ended Friday. But Raonic, his was the last final to wrap up, and he beat Tipsarevic in an Agassi-Sampras type score, 6-7, 7-6, 7-6. No breaks a serve in that match. I wrote about that on today's opening column, the first serve, and I asked a little about Raonic. Some people responded about his, you know, really viability this year, future years. Eric T. about Raonic says, you know, among those three players, Tsonga, Raonic, Murray, he says where Raonic ranks first is in the mental game. He seldom gets smoked in his losses. I wouldn't bet on him winning a slam before Murray or Tsonga, but I would bet that he'll win more of them during his career due to his superior mental attitude. And obviously in a match like that where there's no breaks, the mental game is pretty much as important as the as a physical game. So this is a really nice start for Raonic, of course, who had this kind of start last year and then just really kind of derailed by injury at the end.
I think one thing watching that match is he beat a guy who's in the top 10, Raonic, but even though he went 0-9 on break points, he still managed to win that match. That's pretty good for a young player. I think he benefits the way Sampras and Isner benefit from just having that serve to go back to. I think that makes him a good competitor, not just beyond the fact that the serve will win him points. It also allows him to relax a little bit. He knows he can get the tiebreakers and win those types of matches. Maybe he was even outplayed a little bit by Tipsarevic, but he won in the end.
And all three of those guys have the second serve to back up their first serve too.
He's just going to have to basically wait to wait for his moments. He'll get two or three moments in every set when basically he can make the set turn around. As long as he takes care of his serve, he'll get two or three chances on the other guy's serve in almost every match to do something. And once he gets in that mindset and starts thinking that way, he's going to be really, really dangerous.
One thing watching that match that I was thinking about, I never want to see Isner and Raonic play at Wimbledon. That match would never end.
Yeah, he only plays Mahuta at Wimbledon.
Just start it in the fifth set. Just start it 6-all in the fifth.
Yeah. It's plenty of aces from Raonic. This whole he actually did not lose a service game the entire week. He had over 30 in the final aces.
35 aces,
and I just checked his ranking now. He's number 25. So I believe the cutoff I believe the seedings for the Aussie Open, they came out today. I think that would have factored into it. So he should be. He should avoid one of those possible Djokovic Raonic first round. Possibilities that can happen with a player as good as him impacted by injury.
Djokovic Raonic first round, that would be kind of funny, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
What do you think of Djokovic actually the only player who is not going to play for the Aussie Open, and unlike Federer and Nadal, who both didn't have the best of weeks in Doha, is any thoughts on Djokovic because
I did
of
see him
how he ended his year going in this year?
In Abu Dhabi, it was just an exhibition, but he did play Federer and he beat him easily. And just the way he was playing reminded me of the way he played at the Hopman Cup last year, the exhibition before the Australian, before he went on to win the Australian. He was very loose. Granted, it's an exhibition, but he seemed to be totally back physically, back in shape and hitting the ball really well.
You watch, though. I tell you, I'm liking the way Tsonga's playing. I thought he was I've never seen a big man, including Sampras, hit the heck out of the serve the way he does. Blast that big forehand and then come in and hit these touch volleys from the tops of his shoes. I mean, the guy is unbelievable. He really is.
The volleys are always surprising with him, and they're all he can hit some incredible ones.
He beat Nadal at the Australian one year with that shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's.
I mean, watch out for him. Coming back, you go back to 2008 final when he beats Djokovic. That was a very, very tight final. It could have gone either way, and it would be really interesting. I don't know how they're going to end up in the draw there, but it's going to be very interesting to see if they have a rematch, because I think Tsonga is a different player this year. I think he's been a different player for about 8 months now, and I'm just loving that guy's game.
He's definitely of the. One of those top four is, of course, going to get him in the draw. That's probably the biggest real concern for one of them. The others,
quarters.
Yeah, it's going to just end up in one of them. Ferrer, I think who made the semis last year there, actually, who's, of course, improved a lot, I think, too, since that time. But Tsonga is really the big where does he land? Because Tsonga really has beat all of these guys at some one point or another in their career. So it's, that's
one
big thing of the draw for me.
What's interesting to me about him is this is probably the first extended period where he hasn't been injured. That just seems like something where, finally we get to see him build on some success.
Yeah, he could have been and should have been in some ways.
Right, right.
You know, we forget him because he disappears, and then we think, oh yeah, he's been around 18, number 12, number 16, and yeah, he's good, but he doesn't. No, I think he's changed some. And you know what? The one thing I really like about him too, vis-a-vis Djokovic specifically, is he's got the abilities and the tools not to get into these slugging matches with Djokovic, unlike in Nadal. Nadal's either going to, you know, win the rallies or he's not.
Right.
And last year we saw what happened. But with Djokovic, Tsonga, I think he could take it to another level and actually take away the rally game a little bit from Djokovic and from anybody else, actually. But against Djokovic particularly, I think it could be useful.
The women, the takeaway from last weekend for the women is not the winners of the tournaments. Those were Zhang Ji, Kaya Kanepi. It was the players who didn't win, didn't even advance to the final. It was Serena and Clijsters. Both were in Brisbane. Both both either withdrew or pulled out of the tournament for injury reasons. I think that's what you see as the big news of that weekend. This week, strange enough, a week before Grand Slam, you get this incredible draw in Sydney with top 10 of the top 11 players. I really think the only way this happens is because it's the beginning of the year and players don't have all this mileage under their belt. It's not like you would see that kind of a draw the week before the U.S. Open, or example. But this is a strong affiliate you're going to see all year, really, for the women. And it's a 32-player draw, really top matches right off the bat. And you actually looked at that, Steve, today in a little preview.
Yeah, the big, the big story is people are hoping for, looking for, is Petra Kvitova. To play Wozniacki in the final, or to win the tournament and overtake her for number one, which would be a weird situation for the Australian Open if Kvitova could be the number one player in the world and the second seed at the Australian Open. The seeds at the Australian Open have already been made, and Wozniacki's number one.
Got to celebrate too, I think, correctly.
Very weird.
Get Wozniacki out of there.
Right. But that, you know, so it's already has a significance more than your average tune-up tournament just from that fact.
It's interesting how different the men and women are, isn't it? You know, the men are all laying low and
it's
like
it's a very minor, as you were saying, Steve. It's not even close to the level of stature or the women's draw in there. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The men this week, it's not too much. Del Potro is he's playing this week, but like I said, the attention is certainly on the women here. The only one who's not playing is Sharapova, who is still has had some. It was
injury
a shoulder
issues.
From the dating back to the WTA championships in the in
it
last
was ankle.
Fall.
She, had an she ankle turned problem. Her ankle in Tokyo, and that still apparently wasn't right. But she's apparently been in Sydney or Melbourne practicing, and seems to be good to go for the tournament. She might just be doing like a Serena that she's going to come out, which I'm not sure is very advisable for her.
Yeah, we're really gonna see what we get out of Serena Venus if she decides to play Kim Clijsters because of all the injuries here. So. Certainly, kind of as always, a lot of uncertainty with the women here. But
well, it's good for us, I guess. In the U.S., we care, but I mean, you know, unfortunately, it's kind of a shame because I like Venus Williams. But I mean, you know, where's her game been? You know, I mean, it's kind of funny. We're mentioning her name in there with the contenders. You know, you could just as soon say Agnieszka Radwanska, and you know, in some of these Marion Bartoli and stuff, because Venus's game, you know, she's got a lot of rebuilding to do and a lot of ground to win back to really be one of the top women. You know, it's a pity, like I say, but and especially because of her condition and stuff, but that's the reality, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll look at Sydney a little more this week on the next podcast as that develops. Like we said, that draw is really going to put a lot of the matches you're going to see late in the Australian Open, if the seedings hold, of course. But
and of course, Steve's picking Svetlana Kuznetsova to win both Sydney and the Australian Open. Steve, back to back, what do you say? She's going to do it?
I don't know if I'm going to say that. I might have already said that to somebody. I hope not.
The Sydney-Melbourne double.
Remember that, folks. You always have something to hold over his head.
Yeah.
I've got a lot.
So, yes, we'll hear all those picks and such this week with both of these two gentlemen. Like we said, Steve will be down in Melbourne. Plenty from him, of course, through
the
night.
Are you going to podcast with Steve from Melbourne during the tournament?
Every day. So you'll podcast each night on his time to wrap it up, be up by the morning.
And he'll do 2-3 posts, do a little podcasting, do some tweeting, right?
A lot of tweeting.
Write some.
No matter how many characters, sleep. He'll crank it out. We're looking forward to it. So, tune in next podcast. P. Bodo, Steve Tigner. Ed McGrogan. Thanks for listening.
You've been enjoying Tennis.com's weekly podcast. Thanks for listening. For all the latest news and events, head over to Tennis.com.